Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We're here to give you choices and knowledge of those choices, well, to help make your dreams come true. Mine are coming true a little at a time, which is okay. I'm not in any rush. I've got another 50-plus years to go. I have to outlive my great-grandmother. We come your way every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m., unless we're preempted by or moved to another slot by a ball game. And we are also streaming live at richarddugan.com and newspress.com. We rebroadcast at a2zen.fm on Sundays at 3 p.m., and we archive these programs at richarddugan.com, the radio show's page. So you have lots of opportunities as well. And this particular program will probably run long. No, we're not going past 4 o'clock on this radio broadcast. However, I've mentioned it before. I'll mention it again many times, I'm sure, as we have guests that are just, they're just oozing with information and insight and inspiration and encouragement. And so there will be an afterview. What is an afterview, you ask? It's the interview that's after the main interview, the radio program, or the A to Zen broadcast. So we hope that you will go to richarddugan.com, the radio show's page, later on after this program airs live, as we are live here on what seems to be the 13th of April, 2013. And it's kind of foggy and cool and misty outside. Love it. I love this kind of weather. I know there are a lot of people this time of year who don't love it because they want sunny skies. They want to go sun themselves out on the beach and all that good stuff. And you know what? It can still be fun with the cool weather. We are here every Saturday, as I said, and we have a wide variety of guests throughout the days that we are on, Saturdays and Sundays, and at the archives page. And it's just extraordinary, some of the people that I have come across and that I have interviewed that you have yet to hear. I have recorded a number of interviews over the last few months that will be coming up this summer that I think you're really going to enjoy. So that's all I'm going to tell you. I'm just going to make you have to go to the website and look at our schedules page and see who we have coming up. May is going to be an incredible month. April is an incredible month because we are focusing on the hosts of the radio programs, if you will, I will use that term, radio broadcast, who are broadcast on the A2Zen.fm network. And I am there on Sundays, as I mentioned, from 3 to 4 p.m. And I've been told by the founder and director of The Visionary, Holly Hall, that it's replayed a number of times during the week. I don't know when, but my focus is on the Sunday one. But my guest today, as with the subsequent Saturdays, are going to be hosts, our hosts on that network as well. And today it is Magic Ravenhawk. She is a doctor, and Dr. Ravenhawk, I want to welcome you to our program. It's great to have you with us.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
You are the board president of Engage Life Institute, which is a nonprofit, and your goal is to raise awareness and
eradicate that generational abuse.
Thank you very much. And trauma in the indigenous communities. Now, when you say indigenous communities, in specific, the target is, am I correct, Native American?
Yes, it is.
Okay. You also are a supporter and organizer for state and local Idle No More movement. Explain that.
The I Will No More movement actually began up in Canada with four women that actually realized that the Canadian government was not speaking to the nations there. You have to understand, with our Native nations, we are independent Native sovereign countries within, for instance, within Canada they exist, within the United States we exist. It's not one congruent United States. We have over 500 here in the United States, independent nations with their own constitutions, their own courts, their own police force, everything. When a government, in this case like Canada, decides not to have a dialogue with those particular nations about what's going to be happening on their land and allow oil companies, allow all these people to come in there and set up their system to either, how they're going to take the oil out or how they're going to distribute it and so forth, without consulting the Native nations themselves, then it's, you know, and it pollutes the water.
Mm-hmm.
It really wreaks havoc for Mother Earth.
Mm-hmm.
This is where it all started.
Yeah.
I mean, when this was really getting, and then what, it's now a global movement of all indigenous people. It's kind of an awakening of sorts that's happening now. And saying, you know, yeah, even though it's specifically was raised in indigenous countries, okay, with indigenous people in that community, it affects everyone.
Right.
Because if you don't have a planet, no one can survive.
Exactly.
So then the reason it became very global is we, you know, all the allies came together and so forth and realized that it's mainly a profit, large corporations and so forth, and the way it's happening is the governments are sneaking these things around without having that open dialogue with the different nations that they need to be having.
Well, without getting overly political and going too much further into this, I find it fascinating, and I applaud you for your work and for this reason. Back when I was living in Phoenix and the native tribes of Arizona were wanting to sign compacts to erect casinos on their reservations, and again, they are under the same category. They're sovereign nations. They have their own constitution, police force, et cetera, as you've just described. On the station that I was working, of course, the debate was fast and furious against. And so I was talking with I was actually interviewing this person live on the air, and I said, okay, can we say for the sake of argument that they can't gamble on their own land? What can they do? Silence on the end of the phone. Nothing, not a word. And the thing that troubles me is either they're sovereign or they're not. Whether it's Canada, whether it's the United States, I don't know what Central America's status is, if each individual country, Mexico and Panama and so forth, they have to deal with the same issues. And then there's the other thing where those who were opposed to the gambling issue, because, you know, people will drive onto the reservation and blow all their money. Well, who told you had to? Who put a gun to your head and said, take your savings and go spend it at the casino on the reservation? You know, if the Indians are smart enough, if the indigenous peoples are smart enough to know how to make money off of the stupidity, if you will, because there's a wonderful line that comes from all of these different advertisements for the vast casinos here in the United States. The last line is usually gamble responsibly. And I'm shaking my head going, what? Those are mutually exclusive terms. To gamble is not to be responsible.
Mm-hmm.
Whether in other words, if I'm going to gamble my life and jump out of an airplane, even with a parachute that I know works, I mean, some would say that's not real responsible to jump out of a perfectly good airplane. So anyway, with that said, I applaud you for your work, and I encourage people to check out the websites. We are linked specifically to the website elinstitute.org. But I know that they can get to the Idle No More website as well. But I wanted to take a look. I wanted to take a look at the various aspects of your training, especially in the various beliefs. I mean, this couldn't be more diverse. Traditional Native American ceremonies, Zen Buddhist teachings, New Thought, Universal Life, and Christian, as well as being an ordained Buddhist interfaith minister and clinical hypnotherapist, as well as a certified sexologist helping partners enhance their relationships. I mean,
now talk about ADHD, okay?
Where did you, A, find the time, and B, what was the impetus that told you, I need to stick my all 10 fingers into 10 different belief systems for what purpose?
Well, let me tell you, my core belief is that no matter what your core belief is, but in the healing process of your trauma that you have in life, whether it's, you know, I've got a new book that's going to be coming out called Healing the Thought Virus, and it's, you know, how we're told all of this stuff that we can't do, we won't do, and it's from the time that you're small. So you have to get rid of that virus. But what I see is that in the very core of everything is your spiritual belief. Whether you're Christian, whether you're Buddhist, whether you're Muslim, you're going to find that if you work with your core belief system, the healing will come a lot faster. So what I decided to do is my PhD is in comparative religion. And I decided to get that, and I have two masters, one in Buddhist training, and the other one I also have in counseling psychology. Now, the reason that I decided to do all of that, or particularly do the one with your core belief system, is to be able to understand everyone that walks through my door. Now, I can't say I do understand everybody, but I at least am open to understanding where they're coming from in their core belief. That will assist in being able to heal the thought virus and being able to heal the person and have them, you know, move through life in a happy way, you know, in a content way, instead of having to constantly, you know, buckle against all these forces that are coming after them, you know, at them. So if you're a Christian and you come and say, you know, I believe in the power of prayer, well, part of your therapy will have prayer in it. If you come in and you say, you know, I'm more Buddhist, I'd like, okay, fine. I'll teach you how to do your Zen meditations. We will quiet the mind. We will go that route in your healing process. If you're a traditional native, and of course that one is like tons of different things, but you know, if you want to come in and we need to create sacred space, we need to do the medicine wheel, any of these things, then that's what we do. But that is what allows you to heal a lot faster and more on your terms.
Hmm. And you've been doing this for quite a number of years.
Yes. I guess you're about to make me say my age.
No, I'm not going there. No, I'm not.
No,
I'm not
no,
that stupid.
I don't mind. I don't mind. I'm 53, and I don't look it, and that's just because that's the Indian blood in me.
Well, absolutely. I'm right now, I'm about ready to end my full deck year. At the age of 52, I'm about to transition to 53. I'm not sure what that means, but nonetheless, I still feel 17 inside, but it's like the body says, no, you're not, and don't try it. Then there's gambling irresponsibly.
There you go.
Well, now it just seems to me, and we do the same thing on this program. We bring people on who are of a wide and varied belief system, of different paradigms, if you will, and we want to understand where they're coming from. I remember interviewing members of, believe it or not, I had folks on here from Scientology. Mm-hmm. But I started out the interview by telling the listeners, I'm not going to tell you where they're from. You're going to hear what they have to say, where they're coming from, long before I ever tell you, because what's going to happen is when I tell you where they're from, and I didn't actually say it this way, but you know, when you do that, when you preface something by saying, oh, they're a Republican and here's what they believe, or they're a Democrat, or they're a Catholic, or they're a Protestant, or they're a Muslim, or whatever. You've already made up your mind, but you've never heard anything from where they're coming.
That's true.
And I've noticed more and more, both in the political arena, but just in general discourse from day to day, that, and I was sharing, I was talking with a friend of mine about this just yesterday, about conversation and how, as soon as you take a position on something, someone's going to say, oh, well, you must be, and they pigeonhole you.
Right.
And I sit there talking with people. I say, no, I am not what you think I am on that issue, maybe, if you want to put that in that core category, but that's not what I am. That's just how I feel about that particular issue, that particular point.
Right.
But I feel totally opposite, and I'm over here on the other side about this issue. And I know you and I will disagree about it, but that's just, you know, and it's like, I'm not going to, and that's one of the reasons why I was labeled as a casualty of Christian radio, because I didn't toe the party line, because it didn't make sense to me. There was so much that was inconsistent. Everything that I was told didn't match up. It didn't fit right for me in my mind. And, so I'm trying to maintain that openness. There was a wonderful gentleman, and it was really kind of a paradox, that I met through the religious station, who, and I still remember, his name was Clyde Freeman. I'm sure he's long passed, and he had a program, and he was very dogmatic about his position. But he did say at the end of every program that his mind was open to considering other possibilities. Now, nobody ever came along with another possibility that he grasped, because he was able to obviously refute it. But at least, even in verbiage, if not in practice, at least in verbiage, he had begun that process. So in a way, what you're talking about leads us into the power of words, not just thoughts, because the thoughts become words. And boy, if we could stop the thoughts from becoming those words, this would be a greater place, I can tell you.
Well, don't you think? Yeah.
But a lot of people, they, and this goes to the issue of, and I'm going to throw this into the mix, bullying. A lot of people talk about how, oh, come on, this is just kids. When I was a kid growing up, that's what you heard, is this is just kids being kids, you know? And so I began to, in my 20s and 30s, I began to start processing that information, and I'm going, okay, well, wait a minute. If it's okay for a child to say those things and to do those things, i.e. bullying, then it has to maintain its okayness in adulthood. But it's not okay. It's antisocial, it's disrespectful, it's rude, and in many cases, it's illegal. And yet you're allowing the child to do these things, and the child is supposed to change, and there's a biblical passage that goes, if I'm going to have to paraphrase it, that the way in which you train a child is the way he will go as an adult. A tiger does not change its stripes midlife. It doesn't happen.
And when you think about that, is it, you as an adult need to be responsible enough to know that what you're telling your child is going to form the way that your child becomes an adult. And that's why a lot of times the work that I do specifically, you know, with removing the thought virus and trying to stop the generational abuse and so forth has to do with when the native children were handcuffed and taken to boarding schools, to residential schools. You know, back, way back, where they were taken away from their own parents. And the people there at those schools sexually abused them, mentally abused them, emotionally, physically abused them. They only knew that. That's all they knew. So when they grew up to be adults and they had children, the only way they knew how to parent is the way they were parented at those boarding schools. So it continues on generation after generation after generation. Then you have the alcoholism, you have the addiction, you have everything else that comes along with it because you have the shaming. And when you have the shaming, you know, it's very powerful and it holds you back in life for so many things. Now, to break that cycle, you have to go back and you have to deal with those demons. You have to deal with that. And the way that you move forward is to teach parenting classes, which our nonprofit offers, you know, teach a different way of doing it. It's actually the way it was done before they were removed, you know, from boarding school. But after that point, and there's been a lot of apologies. You know, up in Canada, for instance, some of the residential schools, they're unearthed a lot of human remains, children, you know, where they were all put to death. You've got to understand this trauma is so deep within our Indigenous culture.
And I also know, too, that the church is responsible as well. They did the same thing because they they took the belief systems out of the children of the indigenous, of the various tribes.
If you spoke the language, you were punished. If you, you know, practiced or showed that you had in any way, you know, believed in that way, you were punished. You were to be stripped of, it was always the metaphor that they used is, you know, save the man, kill the Indian. So they always wanted to, you know, and it was a form of control. As you look at some of the religions, if you look at the core of religion, oh, should I say spirituality, it's more truthful. But when you start looking at it, to me, as I start looking at it as a religion, there's power, there is, you know, manipulation, there's all these things that it's not the true nature of what it was meant to be in the very beginning. I tell a lot of Christians, I tell you one thing, if Jesus was alive today and looked at Christianity today, he'd be going like, oh, no, 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 I did not plan on this.
I did not do that.
No, uh-uh.
Yeah.
So, and that goes along with a lot. It's just like the reason that you see, too, within our native cultures is you see them either walking both roads, the traditional and maybe a Christian or traditional, maybe Buddhist or traditional, you know, whatever they can find, is because they were colonized on Pueblo. And through that period of time, the Spaniards came through with Catholicism. So you either converted or you died.
Yeah.
So, you know, you took on some of those things, and you can still see in some of our culture, like the Kachina culture, you can see, you know, how the Kachinas represent in some way. You're able to look at it, okay, well, it was easy for the Catholics to get in because of the saints, okay? Mm-hmm. So you have some paralleling things there. Here in Oklahoma, I find that this one of the most, the deepest colonized nations are here in Oklahoma, where I'm at, and you see a lot of Baptists in a lot of traditions, a lot of, you know, Christian tradition. So they just try to kind of balance it all because that's how they grew up. They had no choice, you know. Back then, you either converted or you were killed, and, you know, kind of most people wanted to live, you know.
Well, exactly.
In my case, I take on Buddhism as well because, it to me, it's a philosophy. It's not a religion.
Mm-hmm.
It's a philosophy.
Yeah, that's what
and
I've been
balances,
told, yeah.
Yeah, and it balances out really well.
When we come back from our break, we're going to get deeper into the aspects of spirituality and the work that you're doing as we continue here, because I want to hear more. Certainly, it's this first portion of the program, but a little bit, probably a little more, I don't know, apolitical in one sense, I suppose. But nonetheless, it's very tangible events and things that have happened in our history here, you know, on this continent. And it's happening around the world even to this day, but it's being done by other governments, other religions, other groups, et cetera, et cetera. And it's really unfortunate. You would think that here we are in the 21st century, heck, in the 70s, as I'm watching the Jetsons thinking, oh, this will be great in the 21st century. And we ain't even close, you know. So we'll talk more about that. We'll talk more about the spiritual aspects and even the metaphysical constructs of in general, Native American teachings, or indigenous, if you will. As we continue here with Magic Raven Hawk, I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story. This is where you'll find new paradigms for a new world. Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. And I'm Richard Dugan, your host, with my special guest. If I'm correct, you said all the way from Oklahoma and other parts, I'm sure, the Magic Ravenheart. Now, was that your birth name?
Here's a whole other book that's coming out.
And you don't have to tell me what your birth name was, but I'm just curious.
No, I don't mind. No, okay. Yes. But I was going to say that I was sold on the black market to a couple. They sold me off the reservation. So actually, my birth certificate has about 7 names on it.
Wow.
So I was sold to a Hispanic couple.
Sold?
Yes. There was a lot of that going on. Again, that's a whole other thing that I deal with in my practice, is with trauma from adoption or children that were stolen from reservations and so forth, and given to non-Native people. And it still goes on today too. So,
do you have
a whole other show for you?
Oh, sure, yeah. And I'm just curious, on all of these areas, when you're dealing with this kind of trauma, when you start looking back at the history, do you have difficulty, or do your, I'll call them clients, have difficulty letting go of the past and being angry at those people for what they did? And yet here you are in the 21st century and they're long dead, and there's nothing you can do about changing what the history was.
Can't change what the history was, but you can deal with it by allowing yourself to be angry instead of bottling it up. Because once you process it, once you're angry about it, once you're either sad about it, once you actually embrace those feelings about it and let it out, whether it be letter writing, whether it be punching a bag to pieces, whatever it is, you're processing it, then it's time, and you can move forward and let go of it.
What?
You won't forget it, but you will release the emotion attached to that particular thing that happened.
Is there a particular modality that works across the board, regardless of the client's belief systems, that you have found that seems to be very effective? I mean, meditation or some other modality?
I'm going to say no, because one size does not fit all.
Okay.
We've all been through something horrendous in our lives. The person that bought me, for instance, was very abusive. Branded me on my neck so my real mother could never ever find me. I was locked up in, you know, a small chest from time to time, and it was very, very abusive. Now, what worked for me to move forward from that doesn't work for other people, but I can relate to them enough to find what works for them.
Now, everyone, regardless of their nationality, seems to have to deal with some form of trauma in their lives.
Right.
I mean, it's as if we haven't learned a damn thing, to be quite honest, from our history. And it seems like maybe it's not a question anymore. We are doomed to repeat it because we can't seem to learn. I heard one of my guests saying that, it sure would be nice if our children, as they're brought into this world, could be free of those things, be in an environment where they wouldn't have to deal with the bullying at school and the abuse at home and the ridicule and so on and so on and so on. And we'd be so much further along as a society.
Right. And we can be. We can be, but it takes people that want to make that difference. I broke the pattern. How did I, and I chose not to do that with my child. I processed it before. I knew. And, again, that aha moment, happens. And you go, wow, maybe this is the problem. So to get help, I got help. And I was able to move forward. Now, I will tell you, I broke that pattern with my child. I never raised a hand to him, nothing. But I also decided to homeschool. Now, that's another thing that some people, and I understand not everybody can do that.
Right, right.
But in doing that, I have a 13-year-old that speaks Japanese. I have a 13-year-old who's a great artist. I have a 13-year-old who's doing all these things. But more than anything, he gets on his Tumblr and all these other things that talk to other kids, and he helps them if they're suicidal. He helps them if they're this, that, and the other. And it's innate. It's that nurturing of helping that he does with his own peers, and tries to also help those that are being bullied as well. So you look at that, and you've got to at some time say, okay, I'm going to be the one to break this chain of abuse. We talked about trauma just now. You said, yes, it permeates, all ethnicities, all groups, everyone. I also fully believe that unresolved trauma is what makes addictions. If you can remove the trauma, you can remove the addiction. Whether it's addiction to alcohol, whether it's addiction to drugs, whether it's addiction to shopping, to eating, to gambling, whatever it is, it's all stemming from unresolved trauma. Because you're self-medicating. Just a different way of medicating.
I had a dear friend who owned a bar in Phoenix, and he and another friend of ours used to go hiking, and we used to talk about his owning the bar, and we weren't challenging him to sell the bar because we thought it was wrong, but just we were kind of observing and saying, well, don't you think maybe you're kind of enabling all these people? All of these people are hurting and they come there basically to anesthetize themselves. He says, yeah, that's true, but at least I give them a safe place to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And he keeps it that way. And I thought that was an interesting way for him to, because if they didn't go to his place, they were going to go someplace else.
Mm-hmm.
That maybe wasn't as safe. And he wasn't making $1 jillion off of this thing, This was not a big moneymaker for him. But it was, and he could relate to them because he's got the same kind. Matter of fact, when I met him, he was going through his second divorce. And when we all parted ways, he was going through his third. So I knew he was going through his own pain. And I felt bad for him because at the time I was the only married one among them, not having been divorced.
Mm-hmm.
I then joined that club a few years later. But these are, and I'm wondering too, if there are things that happen in our lives that we don't perceive as traumatic. And yet, I mean, they stick in our minds as significant that we haven't dealt with.
It can be as simple as you sitting in your second grade class and your teacher getting frustrated with you and saying something which shouldn't be said, but they still, they do. They're mm-hmm. human. They get frustrated and say something. God, you're just never going to get this. That could stick in your subconscious mind to the point to where as you get older and you try to do things that you want to do, what keeps thought virus again coming back saying, nope, you were told you're never going to get this.
Mm.
And it keeps playing over and over and all the way into adulthood. That's why a lot of times I do a lot of e-counseling. And with that, what the whole questionnaire that I give people is, okay, let's go and look and see what is it that you're having problems. Well, you know, I keep trying to reach and I can't quite get it. It's right there in front of me. And when I try to reach out and just actually attain that goal in my life, it falls apart. I self-sabotage somehow. Why? Well, we can either do regression with hypnotherapy. We can do any type, depending on the person, individual, okay? But we find out why. And once you find out that that thought was planted way back then and it's held and its roots have gone deep into your subconscious mind, it's time to extricate that. It's time to get rid of it. It's time to get that virus out of there.
I've attended back in the late 80s and into the 90s a number of personal growth and development programs. Even early 80s, I went through a program called LifeSpring, which a lot of people thought was EST, which it was not. But I went through the three levels there as well. And I used to think in the 90s, when are these people going to get it? But I was looking at those people while sitting in a chair in the very same room with them. And it wasn't until a few years later that I finally got that, you know? It's like, no. When are you going to get it?
Uh-huh.
And it seems as though... let me put this in the form of a question. Does it seem to you that we are making progress, or are we just holding our heads above water and just treading water right now?
Oh, that's a difficult question to answer because I have a tendency to be very literal sometimes, and I'm looking at two sides.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking at a side that, you know how everything was going on with the whole Maya prophecy and the New World.
Oh, yeah.
2012. Okay. There was a shift that was made at that point because people already had it in their mind that there would be a shift made.
Right.
And I do believe that many people shifted into, I need to be aware more of what's going on, of resonating with the planet, or being more into that positivity instead of that negativity and so forth. But I also think there was a whole group who was just did not awaken, that were still asleep, and they're still asleep. And they're just going on and on, just, you know, like on autopilot, okay, without being aware of anything that's going on around them. So half and half, and are we going to make it or not? I don't know. Kind of almost a crapshoot. I'd like to believe that, yes, we're going to make it. I really do. I'd like to believe that. And, you know, and that's why I continue the work.
Yeah.
Well, and that's what through our nonprofit, we keep pushing and pushing, but we can just hope.
Well, if you listen to the news, there is no hope. It will be over soon, you know, just from some of the stories that you hear from the Far East. But when it comes to that aspect, and that's the reason why we very rarely talk about news items on this program, because you can get those before and after the broadcast, and we want to try to bring something a little bit more positive and uplifting in that regard. And I know that's got to be difficult for you because you know the history of the people that you're dealing with, even if it's just in a general sense, and what the atrocities were, you know. And you know, and of course I see certain news programs, documentaries and so forth, going back to World War II, even going back to World War I and the Civil War. What was it I was watching the other day? Oh, it was this piece where this one teacher, he takes his kids, his students, and reenacts for, like, I think it's like a week. And they're all dressed in Civil War attire, both the North and the South. I mean, they're all in different uniforms and so forth. And they're experiencing what went on then. And it's like this one kid made the interesting comment after a particular mock battle that she looked around the playground with all of the people lying down, playing dead, and saying, one of those could have been my brother. And I mean, and it was like she got it at the age of like 8 or 9, you know. And I've often argued with people over the issue of, you know, even going to war. I said, look, if the politicians want to declare it, then let them fight it. It's not my war. It's yours. You're the one that can't seem to get along with those other people. It wasn't the Russian people we had a problem with. It was the Russian government. So I say put the two governments on an island and we'll be back in a year. And whoever's left, we'll let you come home.
There you go.
You know, or that if you guys manage to get along and start over something new, hey, wonderful. Then we'll take a lesson from you and we'll move our civilization forward, which is really what we want to do, isn't it?
Right. And I'll take it a little bit further. I think that if you just let the women go ahead and handle it like the Klan mothers did way back when, there'd be less wine because who wants to see their children go to war and die?
Well, you know, I grew up in a family of five females.
And, good for you.
And it was my father, my brother, and I. Mm-hmm. And honestly, women have always run the place anyway. I would say instead of letting them run it from behind the scenes, mm-hmm. let them run it up front. I have no problem with that. Because I'll be honest with you, and again, no disrespect to the female gender, they couldn't do any worse.
Mm-hmm.
They honestly could not do any worse than the men who have been running it for the last, what, 4,000 or 5,000 years?
You know, and we talked at the very beginning a little bit about Idle No More, and I just want you to know this is what you're going to see because it's the women now stepping up, saying, okay, we're taking it back. It's we're dealing with our Mother Earth. We're dealing with our kids. We're dealing with survival here. You know, the women are on the forefront of this global movement all over the place. It is the women. The women have now picked up their drums, picked up the fire, picked up everything that they did before colonization time and said, it's time. We're back. We've got to do something now. We're at a tipping point.
Yeah. This is one of those, what Greg Braden likes to call the choice point. About 5 years ago, we were conducting an interview, and he told me we were going to be facing a number of them over the next few years, especially in regards to 2012 and so forth, mm-hmm. and that we had to make new choices. And, of course, the Einstein quote has been thrown all over the place, and that is that you cannot solve the present challenges with the consciousness that created them.
Exactly.
And so we got to grow up.
We do. We have to, or actually stop growing up and embrace your inner child and learn, because as an inner child, you knew all the beauty and connected with everything around you, that you knew that we were all connected.
Well, you know, it's funny you should say that, because the thought that just came to mind was the passage from the Bible where the quote is, unless you come to me as little children, you will not enter the kingdom of heaven. So it ain't about good works, and it ain't about what you believe. If you ain't like a child, forget it. You don't get a ticket.
And most children understand that, you know, when children are growing up, children aren't brought up. Oh, not children are brought up, but they were never born with hate. They were never born with racism. They weren't born with this. This was learned behavior from parents or learned behavior from society. But children are not born to hate.
That's where that song comes from the 60s. You know, teach your children.
Ah, yes.
And also, it also goes back to that Old Testament passage as well. And since that's my point of reference, that's what I quote about the way in which you train a child. When he gets old, he will not depart from it. And that goes both. It's a double-edged sword because, again, as you know, whatever you do in the training of that child, that's the direction they will go. So then when you look at the adult, all you have to do is look at the way they're behaving and the way they're acting and saying, okay, I know how that child, that person was trained up as a child.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it just makes so much sense. It's like a tree. Matter of fact, you know, I talk to people about this as well when they get all bent out of shape about the economy, when it's not moving as fast as they would like. And I said, well, let me ask you a question. What if oak trees grew really fast? We have a lot of them here along the Central Coast. What if trees just grew super fast and then the storms come along? And what happens? Those mm-hmm. trees that grow really fast, they get ripped up by the roots and knocked over. And then they destroy things as well when they come down. Whereas the trees that take their time and dig into the earth and hold on for dear life, and you can see some pretty creative designs in oak trees, for example.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, because the weather, Mother Nature has pushed them in all kinds of different directions, but guess what? They're still there. And the redwoods?
And that's what we're going to see in human beings, because the time has already passed as far as reversing the climate change problem. It's done, okay?
Yeah.
We have to learn how to live on a new hostile planet. But how are we going to do that? Will we scale down, for instance? Will we learn to grow our own food? Will we do something? And if we don't, it's going to be, like you said, your roots aren't going to be deep, or your branches are going to be brittle and they'll snap, you know, with the turbulence that's running, that's coming around.
Mm-hmm.
Or are you fluid? Are you able to, you know, become kind of evolving as everything else evolves?
Yeah. The thought came to me of, or the image, I should say, came to me of like a buoy out on the ocean, you know, that just, mm-hmm. it goes with the flow. doesn't have any choice. It goes up and it goes down with the crest and falling of the wake of the ocean. And when there are storms and huge waves, well, it gets buffeted about too, but it's still moving around. It's still floating above water. So yeah, that's it's very very.
Which comes to me to tell people is that it's, you know, all these changes that are going on and so forth, and what you're looking for and what you're wanting to accomplish. So it's not externally; it's all internally.
Yeah.
You have to look internal.
But what I find so fascinating is how many people are out there who are really making it work for themselves. They're really, even though they may not be living the lifestyle that maybe their parents did, or their neighbors, or people that they used to know, or what have you, they're happy, they're healthy, they're doing what they love doing. And of course, as I'm sure you've heard this many times, and you mentioned your son who is, you know, an artist. Well, you don't make much money with art, but that really isn't the point.
No. The point is that you use it, because I also do art therapy too, as well. Let's just throw that one in there too.
Yeah.
And I also have my pieces out there that I sell, but the whole thing is that it is self-expression. It is something that you enjoy in life to do. And, you know, this whole thing about, you know, you have to have the, you know, 4,000 square foot house with the five this, the yada, yada, all this, you know, drive the car. It's an illusion. Again, because consumerism is what keeps the economy going the way it's set up. So the more you buy, the more you get that going. So, you know, learn to live below your means.
Yes.
You'll be a lot happier.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And you'll leave a smaller carbon footprint on the planet, too.
Before we wrap up the program here, and I'm going to let our listeners know there will be an after view. We're going to continue our conversation past the cutoff point of the radio broadcast. Your website is EL Institute, and EL stands for?
Engage Life.
Engage Life. So it's elinstitute.org. Check it out, and we encourage you to do just that and find out more about what this woman is doing. I want to thank you so much for sharing your time and your story, and also for continuing on with us in the after view and talking about some other very important issues as we continue on here. Thank you so much, Magic Ravenheart. And you're also on A2Zen.fm, and you're on in the afternoons, actually on Friday afternoons at 4 p.m. Pacific time, 6 p.m. Central, which would be 7 Eastern. And that's A2Zen.fm, and it's Indigenous Country News, Arts, Politics, and more. We encourage people to check you out. All right, stay with us. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. And we are going to have an after view with Magic Ravenheart, who, again, is on azazan.fm on Fridays at 4 p.m. Pacific time. I'm there on Sundays at 3 p.m. Pacific time. I hope you'll tune into the program as well. And actually, you'll get a double dose of her this week if you're listening to A to Zen, because, well, she'll be on in just about 6 days. So stay tuned to azazen.fm. I'll be back next week at the same time with another edition of Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We encourage you to go to richarddugan.com and download or just listen to the radio show's page archives. All of the interviews that we've done over the last five and a half years are there. And so we want you to get as much information as you possibly can. Until next time, at this time, I'm Richard Dugan for Tell Me Your Story. Love, Talal. So as we continue talking with Magic Ravenheart here on Tell Me Your Story in the After Review, we're talking about some of the areas, and I'm curious as to how you went about choosing the various, I'll call them belief systems or spiritual paths to study and so to speak, become, I don't want to say proficient in, but you studied them to make them a part of, shall we say, your repertoire.
I studied them, you're right, in part to be able to understand the clients that I would be dealing with. So, yes, no, I'm not proficient in all of them. As far as our native therapies, those were you know, brought down through the lineage. I mean, those were given to me through the elders. Those were taught to me that way, okay? And there are some of those things that I can talk about and some of those things I can't talk about when it comes to that particular thing.
Mm-hmm.
Buddhism, I found it, again, it's to me, it's not a religion. It is a philosophy. I love the philosophy of peace. I love the philosophy of treating everyone. You know, we're all connected. So, you know, the quietness, the actual understanding and being in tune with Mother Earth, with everything else around us. The other things that I studied, Christianity, well, I knew that I was going to be I was going to end up getting a lot of clients that were Christian. So, you know, where were they in their belief system, and how can that allow them in their healing process? So there were several things that I did, and I did touch on other things. I looked at the pagan world, and a lot of people say, "Oh, pagan." Well, the word pagan means people of the country, okay?
Mm-hmm.
No, they don't quite understand. They think it's some kind of really weird stuff. So I looked at that, and you know, I have some clients that fall into that. The Taoism, which is an ancient 5,000-year-old, you know, philosophy, religion, however you want to call it, you know. So just knowing enough that when I get a client, then I can go in deeper and learn a little bit more of how they connect with their core belief system.
Hmm.
Like I said, that allows the healing process to move forward.
Yeah.
It a lot smoother. It really does.
Well, I know, too, that defining terms is extremely important. I mean, I used to get into trouble sometimes with some of the Christians who would come into the station at that time, and they were with the ministers, the pastors, or the program host and so forth, and we didn't get into conversations, and I would throw out the word metaphysical, and oh, my God, immediately the shields went up. Oh, get away. Get thee behind me, Satan. And I said, wait a minute. Christianity is metaphysical. Metaphysical only means beyond the physical. You know, can we deal with the facts, please? And this has always been the problem, that you cannot, and I made it a point about 10 years ago that I would never debate or argue belief, because you'll always lose. Because belief isn't based on anything. It's not based on anything. You know, and so you can make it up and say, this is what I believe, and no one can argue with you. It's the same way with supernatural experiences, and I would never argue with anyone. I would always support their contention that they had that supernatural experience, because who the heck am I to say no? So I'm wondering about the supernatural aspects of your life, especially as you are a Native American or Indigenous.
Well, the supernatural, and I don't know if I would call it a supernatural aspect, because we, at least my belief is that, you know, I resonate and I try to stay in connection with this planet Earth,
mm-hmm.
with our Mother Earth. Even the word supernatural, it means above natural, and actually what it is being in tune with nature itself. I don't exactly know what was the question.
In terms of beyond this physical world, I mean, we talk a lot about, you know, listening to the still small voice, mm-hmm. the intuition, trusting your gut, if you will, and all of those are the same thing. So I'm sure that is with what little I know. Okay, mm-hmm. about the plethora of tribes and what their beliefs are in a general sense, nature is the guide. And you listen and you watch and you observe and you see how things are unfolding and you know exactly what's happening. You don't have to question, because it's right there in front of you.
Right. To me, I see it more as a balance of a scientific view too. I mean, you look around, like right now, you can look around and you can see that we're having a problem because the Earth is already warm too much.
Mm-hmm.
You can already see that the jet stream has changed and there's more. In fact, the other day on NPR, I heard that pilots are not going to have to be on the lookout, particularly this summer, because they won't be able to see it with their instruments or see it with their eyes, and they're going to have a lot more turbulence because of the warming changed the jet stream so much that it can hit at any given time.
Wow.
So when you look at that, I mean, it's just plain in front of you. We're doing something we shouldn't be doing to this planet.
Well, and I'm going to throw in this, that there are those who, probably for as long as we've been doing it, have claimed that we shouldn't be, and that is flying. Man has no business in the air. He wasn't designed to fly. Now he can design things, but what other species has done that? What other species has designed another mode of locomotion? None.
That's an interesting concept.
And look what we've done. Look what we've done to the planet through that process, in addition to the number of lives that have been lost since we've been flying, since, 1903.
Well, you know, if you want to go there, then look at all the jet fuel that's put out. Look at all, as far as, you know, contaminating the planet. You even find jet fuel now in milk. So, you know, in dairy products.
Oh, and I love milk. Don't tell me that.
I'm so sorry.
Well, but the point that you're making, I think, is a good one, and that is that we haven't exercised the appropriate forethought to say, okay, if I do this, what are the consequences? What is going to be the resulting effect?
And in our culture, it's called watching out for the seventh generation.
Ah, okay.
Knowing that what you do now, this very moment, will have a consequence on seven generations down the line. And we need to be conscious of everything that we do to be able to leave a world in which the seventh generation down the line can have a good planet, good, you know, clean water, clean air, and be able to do that. And a lot of people have moved away with that concept. I remember talking to a rancher one time, and I said, you know, I think, you know, just listen to me for a little bit. I think that you need to really, really kind of watch about what your livestock is doing and so forth to the water system and so forth. You know, and I said, you know, because your kids, your grandkids, your great-grandkids, he looked at me, and I mean, just as plain as day, without any hesitation, he said, well, I won't be here then, so it doesn't matter.
Wow. Now, I was actually rather shocked history, at what you personally, I mean, you're my age, and I'm going, wait a minute, she grew up in the same time period, what the hell happened? What went wrong, you know? And there are those who would say, well, you know, each of us chooses before we come into this world. We sign a contract and, you know, this is the path and these are the parents and these are the experiences. And there are times when, because I think of this in the context, and I'm going to throw this in there, of the same-sex relationship debate and how ridiculed these people are. Mm-hmm. There are those who say it's a choice. And I sit there going, are you kidding me? Who would choose
To be ridiculed
and abused.
Exactly.
If I could have done it differently in grade school and high school, I certainly would not have chosen to be abused and ridiculed and beaten up.
Mm-hmm.
So
exactly. Well, it's just like that. It starts like, you know, let's touch on the same-sex marriage and so forth. In our culture versus in our native culture, it's called two-spirit. The two-spirit people have always been the medicine people. They've always been the healers. They've always been, you know, those leaders that you go to and the elders that you get the wisdom from, because they carry both spirits in them. But after colonization, after we became colonized, then all of a sudden homophobia set in. But if you go way back in tradition, there were same-sex marriage. I mean, it existed. So you can't tell me that back then there was a debate on whether you chose it or you were born that way. And a lot of the tribes, what they did back then was they would have a child. If they thought that the child was two-spirit, they would put toys on one side that were girl toys and another side that were boy toys in front of them. And that child would pick the toys, and that would tell them, okay, this is the way that they're going. So if you have a female child that went and started playing with the female toys, and then as they got older, they did more of the housework and so forth, they accepted that child that way as being two-spirit. And yes, that child, when he became an adult, could take on a male partner, actually be married in the native way.
Wow. So that's pretty darn, I want to say, open-minded. I know, but it's more than that. It's not just open-mindedness there.
It's just the way that
it's an acceptance. It's an acceptance of as what is.
Exactly.
And then, of course, I sit here and I watch the news programs and I hear the politicians and I hear the religious complain and moan and groan about how it's going to be the destruction of civilization as we know it. And my first question to them is, how is Bill and Bob's relationship affecting your relationship with your wife, sir? How is their relationship directly impacting how you relate to your wife? I don't see it.
And what answer did they give you?
They don't have one.
Exactly.
But other than that, it's just wrong. It's unnatural. It wasn't Adam and Steve. It was Adam and Eve. And it's like, yeah, but you don't even know that, because those are stories in a book that was translated from other languages, and so much was lost in the translation. We don't even know what's true anymore.
And I love when they go back to Leviticus about that a man should not lie but with a man. I said, well, if you're going to take it all and actually really live it, then it also says if your children misbehave, you kill them. Did you kill some of your kids? Because I know some of those children were misbehaving.
And there are some people who wanted to. They wanted to kill their children for other reasons. Well, there's another interesting thing about that, too, and I had the distinct pleasure of conversing with a rabbi who wrote a really great book called The Six Fix. But we got into that conversation just in general, not in the program, but just off, we were just conversing before we ever did the interview. And I shared this whole thing with him. He says, do you know that is not what that passage refers to? When you go back to the original languages, the intent of that language was not to prevent men from lying with men or women from lying with women. The intent had to do with interfering with the natural reproductive process.
Exactly.
Now, a man who is attracted to men can still reproduce with women. It can still be done, and he can go back to his male partner. So he has not broken the Old Testament Levitical law in any way, shape, or form.
Isn't that amazing?
He's continuing to propagate the species, okay? And yet he is not an unhappy person. I mean, and of course, you and I both know of people who they hide for decades.
A lot. Yes.
Or even nowadays, for their entire lives. And they are never happy.
Right.
And and that's what to me is so sad, is the fact that a certain group of people can determine who will and will not be happy. And I jokingly say this, that, well, you do realize that our Constitution does give you the right of life, liberty, but it only allows you to pursue happiness. You will never attain it, but you can pursue it. And I'm just going, okay, all right,
That is true.
Yeah, but I think that that's one of the issues that I know. I have a dear friend. He was my best friend through grade school, through high school, through college. We had some of the best times. We even traveled cross country to Kansas and back to Arizona one summer. And it almost cost us our friendship, but we worked it out and we're still friends to this day. He was gay the whole time. I never knew it, nor when he told me, my only response, and I actually said this to him, I says, what do you want me to do with that information? I don't care. You're my best friend. What difference does that make to me? Now, it did explain a couple of instances in our relationship in later in high school, in our senior year. It did explain a couple of things, but even those things didn't matter to me. I was no more interested in him as a partner than I was in smoking marijuana or taking drugs. It just didn't interest me. Didn't make him bad or wrong.
Right. And you probably weren't his type anyway.
And believe it or not, I asked him that, and you are absolutely correct. He told me, says, and there was a part of me that was only slightly dejected in that. I'm like, oh, wow, okay, fine. Well, and then, of course, then I do have the other side of the sexual spectrum. I get to go to the other side of the table. And my perspective is that God made women right. That's all I can tell you.
I tell you. Perfect.
Absolutely. I myself wouldn't have it any other way. But I know that men who love men and women who love women would feel that way about their partners. Hey, I would have it no other way. And I also noticed, too, that a lot of people who have same-sex relationships, whether they're married or not, my God, I hear, how long have you been together? 15, 20, 25,
30,
40, and it just goes on and on. And I'm going, really? And heterosexual relationships last
5 years, maybe?
Yeah.
Maybe sometimes one.
I mean, I've been in two marriages. I'm in my second, and I have now surpassed the time frame of the first, which gives me a great deal of confidence. I was married for just under 15 years the first time, and I've been with this woman now for over 15 years, and I hope to make it another 15 and then another 15 and so forth. But, You know, I use the analogy of a chocolate cake with people. And I say that when you're, regardless of what the level of relationship is, or who you want to associate or disassociate with, it's like that chocolate cake sitting on the table. You come home from wherever you've come home from, and you look at that cake and you go, nah, I don't want any chocolate cake. Does that make the cake now bad? No. Mm-hmm. It just means you're not interested. So when you're relating to someone and you don't want to be around them for whatever the reasons are, and you don't have to necessarily tell them because, you know, you're too tall, too short, too fat, too thin, et cetera,
right.
I'm just not interested, period. Mm-hmm. It doesn't make, and this is, I'm wondering how you handle stuff like that to the person who was rejected, saying to let them know it wasn't you. And in spite of the fact that that's a terrible cliche.
I know. But just to understand that everybody has, you know, a different preference or different want or different need or different,
right.
You know, and it, when I actually do couples counseling, one of the things is that I do have them make out a list and what is it you need in your life? Each one of them, they don't look at it. Then you go ahead and put it together and you look at it and, okay, these are these needs. Is this person, you know, supplying those needs for you? Of course, you need to fulfill that yourself first, of course. But then for yourself, like you need to love yourself before anybody else can love you. I mean, that's a cliche, but it's the truth.
Sure.
But you look at those things and you say, okay, well, I need, let's say, public displays of affection. But if the other person says, oh, I feel real uncomfortable doing that, and they, you know, how important is that on the whole grand scheme of things? You got to work through so much. People think that relationships just kind of just happen and happy-go-lucky and, you know, the chemistry carries you through life. And it's hard work. And if you're not ready to do the work, it may not work out.
Well, you know, of all of, of all of the phrases that are attributed to President George Herbert Walker Bush, that is one that I I can quote from him and with all due confidence that yes, relationships are hard work. It, from the standpoint that either you're committed to them or you're not.
Exactly.
And if you're not going to be committed to the relationship, then why are you getting into it?
Exactly.
And I'm sure you know of people, you have come across groups of people who they just want to have, so to speak, a physical relationship, and that's all they want to do.
You know what? If they can find someone that you know wants the same thing and they do it responsibly, not hurting anyone, being
yep.
safe, then go for it.
Exactly.
That's okay.
Yeah.
You know, I have some couples that are polyamorous, you know, and it's like if it works for you, then it works for you. But everybody has to be in agreement. So, you know, if you're the jealous type, don't even think about doing that because it's not going to work out. Your marriage will fall apart.
I'm going to guess that there are going to be those who are not familiar with that term, polyamorous.
Oh, polyamorous?
And
okay.
And I guess maybe the best way to describe it is, are we saying just open relationship?
No, it's a little bit different. It's actually, it's having, let's say you have a couple, okay, and they decide that they want to have another partner, but they're going to be the core couple is going to be them, those two. They're going to be the ones sharing most of the things.
Mm-hmm.
They will be able to love. You can either have sexual relations or not have sexual relations. It can just be just a loving relationship with other people. But you don't go out and like, you know, it's not like swinging or anything like that. It's committed. It can be four, it can be five, it can be three, it can be however you want to have it. But it just means that you're open to having a relationship, emotional, maybe relation, maybe sexual, maybe not. Again, that's everything you discuss, okay? And that's what polyamorous is. You have more than one
mm-hmm.
that you love,
okay?
Okay. It's not just like I got friends with benefits on the corner down here. Or something,
right. Right. Exactly. Exactly.
It's more intense, more detailed, and people can actually live that way.
Well, I think too that people do need to find their own way. I mean, I myself have been through some rather interesting experiences in my life, most of them I did enjoy. And I always used to say that when someone would ask me if I was interested in trying something, I'd say, well, I'll try. And usually it's had to do with more with food than the specific experiences. But
I hear that.
I would say, I'll try anything once, sometimes twice. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you know, because, I mean, there's a great poem about dying. And I wish I could remember the quote. I had it written down somewhere. I think it was in a book of one of my authors recently. They had quoted it. Basically, it was saying that you should not approach the moment of death fearful and scared and all of those things and huddled up in a fetal position just waiting for the end. You should bring your body all worn out and even broken and tattered and this and that with like a fistful of chocolates in one hand, a glass of wine in the other, and saying, "Woohoo! I am ready to go."
And it was a hell of a ride.
Exactly, you know what I'm talking about.
Uh-huh.
We've kind of lost that.
Well, we have, you know, and I have a lot of people that ask me, "My God, you've done so many things. You're an artist. You're an author. You're a therapist. It's like, you know what? I'm here. I feel that my purpose here is to live and live this life fully. And if I want to try it, why not?
You know, we wrap this up, I have three questions that I ask my guests now at the end of the program.
Okay.
And part of the reason is because, as I shared with you before, the universe asks the questions, I'm just along for the ride.
Okay.
And these three questions, it's been impressed upon me to ask each one of my guests, and I'm intrigued by the answers. Who is Magic Ravenhawk?
Wow. Who am I? I feel that I'm a spirit being living in this body. Of course, that's real cliche, but I feel that I am here to pose the questions to others to find and fulfill their purpose and their passion in life.
And though you probably just answered this next question, I'm going to ask it anyway. What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you're doing?
For everyone to find peace and their form of happiness.
And how powerful are we?
There's no limit. We can do anything as long as we take the limitations off that we've placed on ourselves.
There's a part of me that wants to say, then why aren't we?
Well, that's when you get back into the, what, are you carrying a thought virus around or not?
Yeah.
And if you are, you have to get it out.
You got to let it go. Get it out.
That's right.
Deal with it and let it go.
And if you don't mind, do you mind me telling everyone they can that I have a blog called healingthethoughtvirus.org?
You just did?
I just did. I know. If they'd like to visit it, because hopefully in the next 3 months or so, we're looking at it coming out on Kindle. So.
Oh, fantastic.
That, so. Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm looking forward to that. That'll be great. And, of course, they can also catch you on Fridays at 4 p.m. Pacific time on A2Zen.fm with your radio program.
Yes.
You've been doing that for how long?
Oh, I was on another platform before I went to A2Zen, so I've been probably doing radio for about now 5-6 years.
What is it that intrigues you so about it that you continue on?
Getting the word out and also interviewing different people and different things that are going on. And you know how you said earlier that there were, you know, the news is negative and tells you that the people that I have, the people that I get on there to talk to and so forth, it's just showing the other side.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? There's a change. That yes, we can change.
You know, you were talking earlier about thought. And I'm working on finishing up, going on 12 years now, finishing up a little book that I'm working on that has to do with, one of the steps has to do with choosing to match your personal input to your choice. There are five steps, and the first one is make a choice, and it stems from my wife's episode with cancer 12 years ago, of which she's been free and clear of for 11. And I asked her point blank. I says, "Do you want to live or do you want to die? I may not like your choice, which is irrelevant, but I will support you in it, whatever it is."
Right.
So you make the choice, and one of the other steps is that you have to surround yourself with those outside sources that support you, not contrary to your choice.
Exactly. You got a clean house.
Yeah.
Years ago, I called up friends and said, "I love you dearly, but if you cannot be positive when you call and talk to me, I don't want to hear from you." I had so many people that were angry, and then I had several that called back about 6 months later and said, "Thank you. It woke me up."
Wow.
You know, and it's fine. You have to clean house sometimes.
Well, I had to ask her to do that with her ex-husband, because every time he came into her presence, it was just negative, negative, negative.
And the toxicity can just wear you down.
Oh, man. And of course, I'm sitting there going, "I want this woman to be around for a while. What the heck are you doing? You already let her go." So, you know, so it's and of course, the same thing with even my ex-wife. I can't call her because I don't know what to say to her. She's living in the same state and frame of mind when I left 15 years ago.
There's nothing to say because she's on her own path. You're on your own path. And
exactly.
You're done. Sometimes we're done with the relationships.
Yeah.
We've come and done what we need to and move on, and we're done with them.
Yeah. I mean, I still love the woman that I knew, but I don't know this person today, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's and then the other thing, too, that people have trouble with is the aspect of freedom of disassociation. They don't understand that they have that, not as a constitutional right. It's a basic human right. You have the right to decide who you want to be around or not.
Exactly. Sometimes it's the codependency they've got to deal with. But I tell you one thing is that, yes, you do have the power to choose. And without apology.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. I thank you again for joining us on the program, and I look forward to talking with you again and hearing and encouraging our listeners to hear your program on Fridays on A2Zen.fm, and also look forward to reading your book when it comes out.
Well, thank you, and I want you on my show.
Well, you just tell me, it's 4 p.m. Pacific time on a Friday. I can do that.
There you go.
I can do that.
You can choose to do anything you want to do.
Well, and I just chose to look at my schedule, and I realized, hey, 4 o'clock on Fridays, I have open.
Hey, there you go.
So you just give me the date, and we'll do it. I'd love it.
I will do that.
Great. Okay. Magic Ravenheart, and again, the website elinstitute.org, and the blog website is?
HealingTheThoughtVirus.org.
HealingTheThoughtVirus.org. Check it out, folks. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love Talal.